Mini episode 728 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. It is a joint edition of Sportsology Radio and the FDH Lounge, FDH Lounge mini episode number 728. You have with you two FDH Lounge dignitaries, Rick Morris and Russ Cullen, and, of course, the proprietor of Sportsology, my man, Russ Cullen. So, Russ, we are here today to talk 2016 Stanley Cup Finals preview. You will be, of course, attending the games in the Eastern Conference, as you tend to do generally. So I know you're really looking forward to this. This is going to be a really excellent series, I would think, in terms of action.
Yeah, this is the one that I wanted to see a few weeks ago. Like, I could see how things were shaping up, and my picks were lousy for, you know, the last couple of rounds, but I did pick the last round for these two. And I like the offensive play of these two. I like the storylines for these two. I like the fact that it's young goaltending, so you don't really know what to expect. I like all of that. And actually, you know, they're new coaches for these teams. And so all of it, it's really sort of like a breath of fresh air, although some might, you know, not like that I said that because Sidney Crosby's in it. And if you mention Sidney Crosby, people go crazy. But all of that said, it should be great.
It should be some really, really excellent action, and you touched on many different things right there in that little snippet that I wanted to get into subsequently. I will tell you, in terms of picks, I was actually doing pretty well until the Stanley Cup Conference Finals, and I was in a pool, long story short, that the FDH Lounge dignitary Joe Lindway had set up one of these things on NHL.com. Lost out on 300 bones. I had St. Louis to go all the way. And they had to at least make it to the finals. Somebody who picked Pittsburgh is going to beat me, I think, by the grand total of like 2 points. So I'm going to get my $20 back, but I'm not going to win $300. What I want to ask you is, do I have a case to walk up to Ken Hitchcock on the street and demand 300 bones from him? Because I will tell you, one of the reasons I picked St. Louis was, you know, they finally are going to have some stability in net this spring. Even Hitchcock's not going to jerk with Brian Elliott. Yeah, little did I know. Do I have a case to be that mad at Hitchcock?
You do, but then I don't know what Hitch will do after you say that. So it's on, you know, it's on you after that.
Yeah. True. Yeah. I don't know that I'm going to get anywhere necessarily, but that was something where, again, I was personally disappointed on that. And I will say that for myself personally, you look at the last time that St. Louis went this far, 2001, coincidentally, the year that I had my most hated finals ever with Colorado and New Jersey, and I felt like I had to take multiple showers having to root for New Jersey over Colorado, both of whom I loathe. Now, we put everything out there.
That was the first time
totally
I attended a Stanley Cup, by the way.
Was it really?
2001.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the first time because, and I wasn't as fully accredited media yet, but I was invited by the NHL. We went on a golf outing, and then we went to one of the games in New Jersey, and it was pretty great. And so after that, I was like, yeah, I got to do this every year. By 2003, I was a regular. So that was a fun cup in the sense that you still had Patrick Waugh in it. You still had Brodeur, so you had that matchup, and then everything else went from there. There were a lot of great players.
And, yeah, I mean, along with Dallas and Detroit, really the defining teams of that era right there. So you had teams that were matching up in there. And I didn't even know that story from you. That's very interesting. I was just mentioning in terms of this is the only other time, I would say, because I don't much like San Jose, but I'll be rooting for them because my loathing for all things Pittsburgh is well on the record. We're completely transparent in the FDH Lounge. I will say that is not necessarily going to guide my analysis, my prediction. My favorite team, for example, is in the NBA Finals this year, and last year I picked them to lose in the Finals when we did the preview show. Will I do the same this year? We'll see. But I'm not fond of that.
I was out in San Jose once in my life, and that was probably back in, I want to say around, actually, no, I was in San Jose twice. Once for business before I was even working on a website, and I actually met the Goo Goo Dolls and the B-52s and hung out with the Goo Goo Dolls for a while in a hotel. So
that was
interesting. But then as media, I was there because 2K Sports invited me out there. They had their hockey game coming out, and you know, at the end, before we left, we ate dinner out with, like, Matt Carl. It was a fun time. And I got to, you know, really see the studios and the city. And the last night out, we taped a few things. And so I get home, and I get, like, a CD in the mail, a DVD in the mail. And lo and behold, the few questions that they asked me about the game, they turned into, like, a vignette. And so I had probably, you know, a minute of screen time, minute and a half, and right after me, Joe Thornton. So that was kind of funny.
That's pretty awesome, actually.
It is pretty awesome. It's up on the Sportsology YouTube page, and that was pretty awesome. So I feel good for Joe. I mean, he's a good guy, and I've been tough on him like everybody else has been tough on him because he really hadn't gotten great results in the playoffs. And so this is his big chance, and so a lot of people will be rooting for him, even a lot of Red Wings fans.
Well, again, this Red Wings fan in particular because he's playing against the Penguins. But, you know, you touched on another thing I wanted to ask you about, so I guess I'll go there right now. And that being, you touched on his issues in the playoffs, and those are pretty much on the record over a period of time. But more to the point, as I see it, the regular season, this is really kind of a throwback statistically to 6, maybe 7 years ago. So, you know, in other sports where there's a little bit more known cause and effect when you start talking about things like the clear and the cream, we'd be suspicious. I don't think you tend to get this as much in hockey, but in terms of suspicion, but you also don't tend to get late career resurgences of this nature that much in hockey. So what do you attribute this to?
Well, there's a the biggest thing, when Peter DeBoer came in, he said, look, Joe, practice when you can practice. Be a part of everything, do what you can, and then when it comes to game days, you know, I want everything out of you. And so I think the fact that he didn't have to kill himself in practices all year probably helped preserve him to some degree, because I don't think he's playing any differently or any better. I think he might be playing with more grit, but I think that is just because he sees the writing on the wall and really wants to win it now and has, you know, languished for a while. So I think that's a part of it, but I do think it was smart by DeBoer to sort of, you know, on certain days, you know what, don't practice. Call it a maintenance day. Who cares? And take some of this pressure off yourself, and I think it really helped him.
That would be a very good explanation, actually. That makes a lot of sense the way that you're laying it out because, you know, that, it's very, very smart in terms of, as you said, the new touch as far as the coaching goes in San Jose. You've seen that in both sides, San Jose and Pittsburgh, with the new coaches getting to the finals, which is very interesting because it mirrors what's been going on in the NBA. And if Oklahoma City polishes off the Western Conference, you're going to have 2 years in a row in the NBA of rookie coaches in there. And in the Stanley Cup Finals, again, it's not exactly the same type thing, but first year on each of the two benches. So,
well, you know, for DeBoer,
is this a wider trend in sports, maybe?
Well, it's a trend a little bit in hockey for sure, because DeBoer, when he was the first year in the Devils coach, he actually made it to the Stanley Cup, if you remember, against the Kings, and that was when Kovalchuk was on the team, and Brodeur was pretty much, you know, that was his last roundup for them. And so that was pretty amazing that he's done that again a second time with a different team. So you have to say it is sort of a trend. And Alain Vigneault, first year with the Rangers, right? Wasn't that when he made it to the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It is. So you're seeing that in both of the two major wintertime sports. Really kind of interesting. And I don't know what you would attribute that to, aside from maybe just a cyclical
different
thing. But it's very, very strange. Sometimes, a new voice in the room, new approaches. Yeah. I mean, when you were talking about what DeBoer did with Joe Thornton, I guess that's a pretty good thing right there. But there's a lot of coaches that are doing that are giving new touches and new approaches, mm-hmm. and they don't always work. So it's really interesting, Russ.
Yeah, you're right. They don't always work. But I think the key is for some of these that we're talking about, their teams were close already. You know, when Vigneault mm-hmm. took over for Tortorella, the Rangers were very close, right? You knew they were close. The Sharks have been close forever, right? So now if Florida got a new coach this year, even though they got passed around in the playoffs, would you say that we would expect them to go to the Cup? Probably not. So that's where that trend would probably end. So I say the trend is good when it's a new coach on a team that was already a contender.
Well, that's true, and where it's happening in the NBA is you had coaches going to top-flight situations already. So, that's the common denominator, and that really kind of makes a lot of sense in that way. But when you're talking about these coaches and the approaches that they're bringing, this is a matchup that we really, again, didn't see coming, I think, coming into this, certainly coming into the season. You got San Jose that didn't even make the playoffs a year ago. Their trend line had been down over the last several years as far as making an impact. They're one of the teams in the league. They're on a short list of teams pegged as perennial underachievers. The Penguins, who looked like they were building towards the trend line everybody was expecting with Crosby, Malkin, what their careers were supposed to be, two Stanley Cup finals, one Stanley Cup win, silent mm-hmm. since 2009 as far as even getting back to this point. So in the interim, we've had a lot of Kings and Blackhawks and Bruins, but these are teams that, again, I won't say people necessarily have been sleeping on for the last 7 years or so, but they're both teams that really seem to have something to prove in a very, very similar kind of way.
Well, I think the Penguins had a tale of two seasons because that first part of the season, it seems like Jim Rutherford made all the wrong moves. The team was defensively inept. They were getting great play out of Marc-Andre Fleury, but the team wasn't able to come back from behind, and so I remember looking at them and saying, wow, they could miss the playoffs. And then, you know, they made some moves, and I was like, boy, I don't know. They didn't bring in anybody strong defensively, so we'll see what that means. And it didn't matter because what they brought in was people that were fast defensively. And so they, even though they may not be stalwart defenders, they get the puck out of the end, their own end, really quickly and get it up the ice, and they hold on to it in the other team's end. So when they're getting scoring chances, they're sort of grinding it out a little bit and playing keep away. And they play keep away more than they grind it out, more than they like cycle or anything like that. So that has really done wonders for them. And I think that's a big deal. And to be honest, I think Marc-Andre Fleury going out, Matt Murray going in, Murray was a, you know, very high thought of goalie. He was doing great in the AHL. I remember when he got drafted, you know, he's like 6'4", 160 pounds, no joke. He was maybe the skinniest goalie I'd ever seen, but I knew in a few years he'd be good, and he played well for the Sioux and in the OHL. So, you know, he's had a nice gradual climb here, and, you know, he got the chance. He made the most of it. I think Sullivan made a big mistake bringing in Fleury after, you know, performing mop-up that one game, and you know, he got lit up a little bit, and even he said, yeah, I didn't feel like myself. I think that was an overtime loss, right? And so Murray went back in, and he won. And so, you know, I think that's been a big key to the success. I mean, we saw this happen with the Carolina Hurricanes when Martin Gerber was the regular goalie, and then Cam Ward eventually unseated him and eventually won the Conn Smythe in the Stanley Cup. So these things can happen.
Well, it's a fine line, though, when you look at situations
I didn't say anything about San Jose. What was thought about and what I remember talking about for San Jose was an aging core,
right,
and sort of like a patchwork off season that you didn't know if it was going to work out. We knew Martin Jones was a good goalie. We didn't know if he was a great goalie because he had never really had a full season as a starter, not even close. And so that has definitely worked out way better than I thought it would.
Yeah, they've done very well with him. Murray, again, in limited action during the season in Pittsburgh, did some really nice things, but the usual caveat is getting in a lot of the back-to-backs. You're getting a lot of the teams considered weaker. That's how it tends to go. So it's hard to know how much to make of those numbers, but it seems like it's a fine line there, Russ, between if he has actually emerged and taken the reins and become a number one goaltender, or if it's a situation of, well, we have two goaltenders, because anytime you have two goaltenders, like two quarterbacks, you don't have one. So which is it? Do you think that he's really stepped up and that Fleury is basically superfluous at this point?
Well, for this season. The problem for next season is Fleury has a big contract. I don't think he'll get dealt. Even if they try and deal him, I don't think he'll be able to be dealt. And so going into next season, you have to at least say that there's a competition. Now, if Matt Murray wins the Stanley Cup, there won't be a competition. Then Marc-Andre Fleury will just be the backup. And that'll be the way it is. Like, that's just tough. Now, the year after, he will certainly be, well, not even the year after, that following June, he will certainly be trade bait. Well, not trade bait, bait for the expansion draft for the Las Vegas team.
That's right.
Because he'll be a guy that they won't protect. And so they'll hope that Las Vegas will want a veteran goalie, and that would solve their problem. So, but, you know, I look back at the Nashville draft, and, like, the Rangers dangled Mike Richter, and Nashville didn't bite. Nashville went with Dunham, and they went with Tomas Vokoun, who was a good young goalie at the time for Montreal. So both of them were young, and they probably thought Dunham was the better of the two. I remember the press, because he was an American goalie, and he had a little caveat, you know, a little gravitas, but at the end, it turned out Vokoun was the better of the two. And so, you know, you don't know how this new franchise will go. Maybe in Vegas they'll want to sell tickets, and maybe Fleury will be that guy.
Yeah, that could definitely help them in that regard. So if they're looking at that, you got to think that that would be a factor. But, yeah, that's one of the interesting things here. As you said, we have a couple of young goaltenders here, not a whole lot to look at as far as career experience, certainly when you go back past this year. As you said, San Jose, their off season, it was hard to know what to make of it at the time. They're a team that in the playoffs here, really, because of their past history, because of being in a brutal division, really kind of came through the weeds. And it really didn't strike me until today when I was looking at something. One of the features that we have every year, and of course in the next couple weeks we'll be coming out with it as always, Pro Hockey Draftology 2016 from the FDH Lounge, Fantasy Draft.
Wait, how many of those have we put out? You put out a lot.
I think going back to 08 jointly. Coming up on a decade, I believe. I think going back to then. Well, here's one of the things that I like to do in there. One of the features that I like to do is, if the playoffs were seeded 1 through 16, what would the matchups have been? And you play it out based on how the teams played. Who do you think would have won every round? Do you know that I can't complete that feature until the finals are done? Because, believe it or not, the 6-11 feature would have been Pittsburgh-San Jose. Can you believe that? They would have met in the first round if these teams were seeded 1 through 16.
Yeah, that's crazy. But people complain about this format. Look, people complain about every format. But I like this format because some of the first-round matchups, albeit they're tough as hell and they're really brutal, you know, we've gotten, like, you know, Rangers Flyers in previous years now, which we didn't have in a decade. And actually, it was more than that. It was 97 before that. And so we're getting some great first-round matchups and great second-round. Then, you know, by the time you hit the conference finals, those teams have earned it. Like, it really, to me, it doesn't matter. You know, second round, you could bitch a little if you see that, you know, like Washington, Pittsburgh, somebody's got to lose. You know, like, that's all right. You know, I get it. I mean, that's tough, but that's the way hockey is. And so I think that is kind of incredible, though. I do. I like that.
Yeah. It really kind of struck me when I saw that, because I'd been able to forecast out a lot of the other stuff, how I thought it would have gone. But I got to hold off till this one's done, lest I end up picking a wrong result for how that would have shaken out. But as you said, the paths of the teams as they got to the Stanley Cup final, and that's something we have to look at as well. My sense is, in looking at the East and then looking at the West, again, it was kind of a lighter regarded Nashville team than usual coming into the final or coming into the playoffs, but they did beat Anaheim. So I'm tempted to say San Jose had the tougher path, particularly when you look at a Pittsburgh team going seven games against Tampa Bay, who was never quite 100% and who played six of the seven games without Stamkos. And who knows how much we saw of Stamkos physically in the last game there. No offense to your Rangers, but they seem like kind of at an awkward point this year. Scoring punch from Nash anymore. Yeah. Lundqvist he's not over the hill yet, but he's not where he was 2-3 years ago. So
no,
I look at the path for these teams. I think San Jose proved a little bit more. Now, there's always the chance, too, that could work against them because you look at St. Louis, 7 games against Chicago, 7 games against Dallas. Yeah. I know that played a role in the Western Conference Final. How do you look at it in terms of the tougher path? And if San Jose did have the tougher path, do you think it could almost work against them as far as exhaustion?
No, I still have to think you made a good argument, but I still have to think Pittsburgh had the tougher path because – yeah, the Rangers series definitely wasn't as tough as it should be, but you still were facing Lundqvist, and you still were facing a team that knows how to win. They got past that, and then the Capitals was tough, right? I mean, that series could have gone either way. So, and Tampa, while they were a little banged up, they still gave them a great series. It went 7, and 7 in the conference finals, like, you don't necessarily want to do that. I think both teams have really had tough paths, and I think they're equal. Right now, I don't think either of them have the edge or either of them is hurting more than the other. I think, you know, if you want to give Pittsburgh a bonus point because they lost Daly for the year with a broken ankle, you could. And maybe that would be the one thing that could show up against this series because of the great forwards that San Jose has.
And as far as the X's and O's, I want to delve into those with you in a second here. First, I want to ask you about, in what may be the last couple of minutes here in real time where this is still in any doubt, as we are talking, the Western Conference Finals and the NBA are literally playing out in real time. Golden State may go out tonight. If they do, or if they go out Monday night, although the league wouldn't like that because it would be a Game 7 up against Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals, will the league breathe a sigh of relief? The NHL, a little bit, although they'll never admit it. If Golden State is not in the finals this year because you have San Jose, and it's a weird thing. This is this gigantic market, this conglomerate of like 3 major cities, and each of them, and combined, they only have one team in hockey, one team in basketball. And you, almost all of the time, that team will get all the attention while their series is going on. You look at San Jose, I got to think only on game days when Golden State will be off, is San Jose going to get the amount of attention that they really should be getting as a team in the Stanley Cup Finals? I know the NHL probably can't like that too much if it happens.
No, I agree. I think that's a huge factor, and I think the NHL will be pleased, although, like you said, they'll never admit it, if Golden State drops out. I think it's kind of amazing if Golden State drops out because, you know, for almost the entire year, everybody had talked about Steph Curry, and so just the amount of focus on Steph Curry, having him not be on the airwaves, definitely helps the Sharks because now I could see the Sharks pulling a much bigger number on their play on their Stanley Cup games, just because that's the only show in town.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by the business ramifications of these things, and that was the one thing that jumped out at me right away is that the Bay Area is represented in both finals. Which would be obviously unprecedented for the Bay Area. It doesn't tend to happen a whole lot in general. I'm thinking the last time it might have happened off the top of my head, was it 94 Knicks Rangers?
Yes.
Okay. And the Rangers didn't suffer for oxygen while that was happening just because of the whole 1940 thing, right?
Right. I mean, that happened to be a situation where it worked, but I believe the games were all staggered. So I don't think it was a big problem. There may have been one or two games with an overlap, but I don't recall it. I remember being able to watch everything and being obviously more annoyed with the Knicks at the time, being a Knicks fan, but I'm no longer a Knicks fan, but I was at that time. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think that may have been the last time.
Yeah, that, off the top of my head, that's what it seemed like. And before I get to any of the X's and O's, the other thing also, too, do you think we're going to get any coverage in the next couple days, any kind of throwback to the 70s? I always like to see historically how areas kind of match up here. Are we going to get any nostalgia for the Steelers-Raiders rivalry of the 1970s here, the previous time that you had Pittsburgh doing battle with the Bay Area on a real big stage? Are we going to get some of that nostalgia out there?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you'll find a cheater like Dave Casper who could literally kick the ball halfway down the field and into the end zone and call that a win. So I don't think so.
I will tell you, by the way, Oakland, California, and Columbus, Ohio are the only two places in the world I think that still revere Jack Tatum. It's always kind of jarring to go to the horseshoe and see that he is not considered a crippler like he is in the rest of America.
All right, as promised,
as far as some of the X's and O's go, at least on the surface, as far as how people are looking at this, when you're giving big check marks on either side, the ones that the experts kind of tend to go on is check mark for San Jose physicality and certainly the power play, and particularly with what they've been doing in the postseason versus Pittsburgh, puck possession and speed. Those are the two big things that tend to be in their favor. So do you kind of tend to agree with the consensus in these areas here? And if so, how do you see the pros and cons matching up with the teams here? Because, again, you have a Pittsburgh team that could be destabilized by the brute force, or a San Jose team that could potentially get skated around an awful lot.
Yeah, I will tell you that I think the experts are right on those parts, and I've been pretty good with Pittsburgh. Like, I knew they were going to beat the Rangers, although I thought the Caps could beat them. But I've had a pretty good beat on them recently, as trying to figure them out, and I think they have the edge in net. Matt Murray is really hard to rattle. He has only given up a couple bad goals in the playoffs. I mean, he was pulled to one game where there was four goals, but it wasn't all his fault. And I think they were just literally trying to give him a rest at that point, because they realized, all right, this kid's playing more games than he's ever played in his life. So I think they have the edge in net. They definitely have the edge in speed. You know, Marlowe's 39, I think. And, you know, Thornton's getting up there. And so same thing, same age. And they do have some fast guys, don't get me wrong. But Pittsburgh is way faster when they roll all four. So I think there's that edge for them. Definitely, like you said, with puck possession. And I just, you know, if there's a guy, if we're going to, again, people aren't going to like this, but if you're going to focus in on one guy, well, there's two guys in Pittsburgh right now that are playing exceptional, and it's Crosby and Kessel. And so that's been a big factor, where if we look at San Jose, we're looking at Thornton, we're looking at Donskoy. Pavelski's been great, too. Pavelski's actually been one of the best players in the playoffs. But those are the big three. I can name, you know, still Malkin and other ones. And so you kind of wonder, it seems like Pittsburgh's big names have woken up late. And a lot of this will hinge on Chris Letang, though, because Chris Letang's been taking a lot of dumb penalties. His dumb penalties have exceeded some of his great offensive play. But I just, you know, if push comes to shove, I still have to give Pittsburgh an edge here, because they have the best defenseman of all of them as in Letang as far as being able to score. And I think they have more scoring even than San Jose, even though you would say, hey, San Jose has been rolling all this time, and they have, but they haven't faced a team like Pittsburgh, where it's literally hard to get the puck from them. And that's something, is if you don't have the puck, you can't score.
It is very difficult. And again, somebody you mentioned briefly there as far as how well he has been playing in the playoffs and certainly through the season, Joe Pavelski, who a lot of people, I think, including myself, would consider to be their best player. And that's something that I'm interested to ask you about, because, again, you've got Crosby, Malkin. These are a couple guys with pretty high Q ratings. And to the extent that people outside the hockey bubble know any names, those are a couple of the names that they know. Now, the league hasn't had the best record the last couple of years in terms of pushing guys out there, even when they've had success. Jonathan Toews, Anze Kopitar kind of come to mind. These are not guys with real high Q ratings. Somebody like Joe Pavelski, who, again, looking ahead to our top 30 list that we're going to do in a couple weeks here in terms of the best players in the league, somebody who's very high up on that list right now, is this a guy that has a chance to really kind of make a name for himself, even outside of core hockey fans with a big series, because he is such a big star?
I think so. His last couple of years have been fantastic. He's had like 40 goal years. I've been interviewing him for a while now. I mean, in 2003, which we all consider the best draft in the last 20 years, maybe even more, he was seventh round in that one. Like, it's crazy. And so You know, when you think about it, tomorrow is the media day for the Stanley Cup, and I think Joe Pavelski will be a big star on media day. I just have that feeling. I think people are going to focus in on him, and so I think after tomorrow, that's going to help him out a lot as far as, like, his cue awareness.
That makes sense. Because, again, those are the kind of platforms that can be exploited for that. So in terms of getting a big-picture sense of the series here, I'm getting the sense from you that you are leaning towards forecasting a Pittsburgh win, yes?
Yeah, I am leaning that way. It's, you know, I'd like to try and take into everything into account. I even like to sort of get the pulse of the team before I have to do that, but I'm not going to get that luxury because you called me tonight. So based on that, I do like Pittsburgh, and I do like them in seven. And the reason, home ice, people could say it's been, you know, marginalized, and that may be true, and they could say a lot of things. And I even watched your Detroit Red Wings beat Pittsburgh on their home ice, right, game seven.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's happened.
And I covered
anything is possible. And Tampa Bay, yeah. That big game, they didn't win game seven, but they won game five, and in kind of shocking fashion. So there have been exceptions to that rule.
Yeah, there's definitely been exceptions, but I just think push comes to shove. You know what? It's still a big deal, and I think for these guys, it's a big deal, and I think it's for a big deal for a team facing them because they have such big guns.
I'm sure we can look forward to seeing some sweet chin music on the ice if there is going to be a game seven. They're definitely going to
want to. He's not going
to
be there. I don't think he's going to be there. He stopped showing up, it seems, after the one game. And I thought they were going to counter with Hogan again in Tampa, but they didn't. But I said when I didn't see sweet chin music, because they had the HBK line, when I didn't see him, I thought maybe he took a sidewalk slam from Ricky Steamboat again. I just didn't know.
Well, see, that's the difference between Pittsburgh and Cleveland. They have to import their heroes. I guarantee you, Stipe Miocic is going to be brandishing that UFC World Heavyweight Championship at every Caps home game in the finals. He will be in the house.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Jim Brown will be there, and maybe Johnny Manziel. Oh, sorry.
No, it won't be him, but I think Bernie Kosar is probably going to be there. We have a pretty good record of trotting out all the heroes here.
Yeah, Ernest Byner.
This,
yeah, you do. You do.
Nice cheap shot, buddy. Ernest, the one thing I could say about Ernest Byner, he was on the winning side in an 86 AFC playoff game, I remember.
He was.
He was indeed. But in terms of how I'm looking at the series, I think home ice is going to come into play as well in terms of my forecast on this. I am going to break on this one here and take San Jose in six. I think if it goes seven, they're going to be in trouble, although I think they got the mentality. They certainly have to have
the
toughness coming through. This looks like a new Shark team to me, and that's the whole thing here, too.
It is. It's not the same.
I might have gotten it wrong on a team,
totally
St. Louis. Yeah, I got it wrong on St. Louis being the team to come through in the West, but I had a sense that there was going to be one or two of these teams that traditionally has had trouble getting over the hump, and it looks like San Jose has really kind of seized that mantle. I'm looking for, I think, a big effort out of Vlasic, who I think is going to, particularly the games in St. Louis where they're able to control the matchups, I think he's really going to assert himself.
You mean San Jose?
So I think it's
St. Louis.
Yeah. He's gonna be huge, and I think if they can steal one in Pittsburgh and then just hold serve in San Jose, I think they're gonna be in good shape. And I don't see Pittsburgh winning the first two. Now, what's interesting is if you see it seven, you may not see Pittsburgh taking the first two, right?
No, I don't see it. I don't see it that way either. Correct.
Okay. All right. So you got Pittsburgh winning one in San Jose, where you talk about tough places to play, too, and an advantage. I know from all these years of watching the Wings play there, the Shark Tank, you know, that's Raider fan by another name in that building, basically. I mean, you may not
Shark
have the
Tank, I would think, has – they have a nice edge in the Shark Tank. The console is not quite as ruckus, you know, not as crazy as the Mellon used to be, but still, Pittsburgh has pretty great fans. They'll be out there in force. But I have to give the Shark Tank the edge in that regard for raucousness.
Yeah, they're kind of hard to beat. They really kind of are.
Yeah.
And, again, I I say that somewhat reluctantly, as my Wings have taken it on the chin there numerous times over the years. So, yeah, I don't. It's going to be a really, really interesting battle, and you don't always kind of tend to get these physicality versus speed matchups in the finals. It's always an interesting differential whenever you do get that.
The league changes. You know, the league every 3-4 years, the league sort of changes, and so Pittsburgh is sort of being looked at now as, well, if this works, a lot of teams are going to start building themselves like Pittsburgh is now.
Yeah. There's a lot to be said for that. And what's interesting, too, is that just to kind of bring it full circle, when you're talking about the off seasons and everything that came to building these teams up and getting them over that hump that neither one of them's been able to get over the last several years, is that you kind of had the sense when Pittsburgh made the trade for Kessel in the off season, I don't think that any of us looked at this team necessarily going in and thinking it was going to be as deep as they have been. You talked about thinking that they may be deeper in terms of scoring punch than San Jose, and they seem to be going for the top-heavy model in the off season, at least on the surface, and it's played out in a way that's actually been more advantageous to them.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I do.
But it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out if Pittsburgh, and maybe the biggest variable in all of this is going to be if they can stay out of the penalty box and deny San Jose those power play opportunities. But I will greatly enjoy getting a chance to see this on TV. Wave to me from the press box, my friend.
I will
be greatly happy for you getting to be there in person for all the games in Pittsburgh. Looking forward to the great coverage that's going to be coming on Sportsology. And, again, mirrored by the great coverage here today. So thank you so much for your analysis, my friend. And I'm excited for you to get to watch a number of these great games in person.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks, Rick. Always fun.
All right. Travel safely, my friend. Thanks so much for doing this. Thank you all, everybody, for tuning in to this joint episode of Sportsology Radio and the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.